Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Get a Grip podcast. I am Shane Bacon. Hope you guys have had a great week. Hope you guys are excited for the weekend. I head to Denver, probably as you're listening to the podcast, going to Colorado for the U.S. Amateur, first U.S. Amateur for me. And as I prepared and got set, I had a couple of podcast ideas. One of them, if you have listened to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast, you know that Marty Jurtson, who I co-host the podcast with, is an absolute genius when it comes to everything golf-oriented. And I had to reach out to him because altitude is going to be a big part of next week. And we just recorded a podcast. It should be dropping on your feed sometime early next week. So make sure you're subscribed to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast and get a listen to that pod, because we dive into altitude and humidity and wind, and he made me a cool chart. So it's worth your time kind of watching that pod on the YouTube channel at Ping. So a lot of fun chatting with Marty about that. And then I reached out to Curtis Luck, who, of course, won the U.S. Amateur in 2016, and that is what you're going to get today. Me and Curtis chatted about the win and the mentality and what he thought about in terms of stroke play, and then, of course, when he flipped into match play, some of the big names he beat in that match play back in 16 at Oakland Hills. So big thanks to Curtis for the time and the very, very timely advice as he gets set to play a Korn Ferry Tour event. And yet he took 30 minutes to chat with me about the U.S. Amateur. And tee times come out on Thursday, so by the time you're listening to this, you're going to know who I'm playing with. Excited for some practice rounds. I think me and Stu Hagestad are going to try to sneak out and play a practice round together, which I'm excited about. Obviously getting to pick the brain of a USGA champion and a guy that has had a ton of success in the U.S. Amateur over the years. Just a couple of housekeeping things before we get to Curtis. One, if you don't know this, you should know. I wrote a children's golf book last year, and it's available now for you to read and buy and purchase and send as a gift to any new parent or parent with young kids that you want to get involved in the game. It's called The Golfer's Zoo. And if you go to back9press.com/bacon, you can purchase a copy. And we have signed copies. I flew out to Chicago in the winter and signed about, I think we signed 500 or 1,000 copies of The Golfer's Zoo. So you can buy a non-signed copy, which is totally fine, or you can buy an autographed copy of The Golfer's Zoo, and it makes for a great gift for any potential parent or new parent or parent that just has young kids that is looking for something to at least interest them in the game of golf. And I own a logo consulting company with my good friend Kate Smith, who's been grinding and playing some solid golf on the Epson Tour. It's called Ground Under Repair, and if you go to gurdesigns.com and you're looking for a logo for your golf course or an updated logo or a guys trip logo or anything really, even outside of golf, we've designed some logos for some non-golf companies. We've also worked with some of the biggest companies in the game. We just did a golf ball design that we're very, very excited to see land here in the few months, but worked with some, you know, top 10, top 20 golf courses in the country. We've designed some logos for some of the biggest instructors in the game. We've teamed up with the PGA Tour, the USGA. It's been very, very fun over the last couple of years. So give us a look. Follow us on Instagram, Ground Under Repair. I think you're going to like what we do. And if you're ever interested in something for your guys' trips or your golf trips or your buddies' trips, hit us up and we can help you with that. And that is it. Like I said, headed to Denver. You can follow along on the USGA website on Monday, Tuesday of stroke play. And if I do what I'm trying to do and get into match play on Wednesday, I think that's on TV. I believe that's on Golf Channel, round of 64 and beyond. So fingers crossed, got to go out there and try to make a whole bunch of pars and do what Curtis told me to do in the podcast. So let's get to Mr. Luck, 2016 U.S. Amateur champion and a guy that has been playing some solid golf as of late on the Korn Ferry Tour. Joined by the 2016 U.S. Amateur champion for a little advice. Curtis, I appreciate you doing this. You're doing this tournament morning. Look at you. I mean, you're like a media pro getting up early for me. Thank you so much.
No, I'm excited. It's pretty cool to see that you've qualified. So this is big stuff.
Yeah. So you were just telling me fifth week in a row on the road. At what point does it just become like, you know, rinse, wash, repeat, don't know what town you're in, don't know where you're eating, don't know where you're getting coffee, and you're just like, waking up and you're kind of a zombie?
So 3 weeks usually my number. Fourth week's like just like I can just manage my way through it. After that, it becomes like I don't really like feel any different week to week. I just feel a little tired, a little sloppy. But you know, you just push through, especially towards the end of this part of our season called free tour. It gets kind of hectic, so you kind of get forced to play.
Yeah, I was learning a little bit of new information from James Nitties about you last week on the broadcast. That was a lot of fun. Getting you in our window and the Nitties throwing out potentially true nuggets about you. It was nice. I appreciate you leaning into our goofiness, you know?
Yeah, no. I just let Nitties, be creative and do what he wanted in that. And so, yeah, no, I think it was very amusing, and I've had so many people come up to me asking me questions, and it's been very interesting since.
I was kind of checking out the last couple of weeks on the Korn Ferry Tour. It seems like you found something over the last 2-3 weeks. What's flipped in your golf game? Because, I mean, you know, you've kind of played your best golf, I'd say, of the season over the last, you know, 2-3 tournaments.
Yeah, it's been an interesting season. I've had ups and downs this year in like the way I felt about playing golf. There's been a lot of periods where I've struggled just mentally, like enjoying being out there. And so I've taken a fair few off weeks this year, but it's been an interesting year in the fact that my golf has been the most consistent. It has for a while. I've made quite a lot of cuts this year. I haven't missed too many. And then I've just had a big stretch and a big run of, you know, finishing around the 40th, the 50th mark after making the cut, which is obviously really frustrating out here. It doesn't get much done. It shows that like you're not that far away, but sometimes you can go on stretches where you feel like you are. So yeah, no, it's been close, but the last couple of weeks, putter's been rolling. I've hit it a little better. And yeah, I've just probably made the most of more opportunities than I had been. So yeah, just got to keep that ticking over, you know, and go into these last, I think we've got 6 events left. So just got to keep playing good, and we come into some elevated points as well. So that's important.
Yeah, Curtis, I was talking to Nitties about this last week. So the idea of golf, like when you're a young player, you're a junior player, you're an amateur player, and then now a pro, you know, the numbers in our minds have all stayed the same. When I say that, I mean, you go play a round of golf and you shoot 3 under, you know, you shoot 69 or 68, and you feel like you played a good round of golf. Like that's the way our brains have been manipulated to believe that, you know, 2 or 3 under par, you didn't make many bogeys. The thing with the Korn Ferry Tour is, as good as you guys are and as deep as the KFT is, and as, you know, let's call it easy as the golf courses are that you guys play week in and week out, it can kind of screw with your brain a little bit. How do you handle playing a quote unquote bad week of golf, but you shoot 15 under, you know, you shoot 12 under and you finish 30th. How do you handle playing that level of golf, yet the result maybe isn't what you wanted? How can you digest something like that?
Yeah, I think the thing I've really learned and noticed over here on this tour is, you know, it still takes good golf, even on the easy courses that are soft, to shoot 5 or 6 under, because the fact of the matter is hitting bad golf shots on any tournament golf course is going to cost you. So the guys obviously that go out and flush their way to shooting very casual 6 and 7 unders, they probably are like, yeah, you know, this is so easy. But for me, who's been struggling a little bit off the tees and into the greens, you know, those bad shots still cost bogeys. And so shooting 5 or 6 under does still feel quite good to me. And it wasn't really until this week that I'd heard someone or thought about it the way you're saying, and we're playing a good golf course this week in Omaha, and someone said to me, it's nice knowing, you know, that if you go out and shoot 4 or 5 under here, like you've actually like played well, like there's a justification to playing well. It's not like you just got it in the hole or you have genuinely played great golf. And I was like, yeah, that's funny. You know, you just spend so many weeks on the road here shooting 5 under and you just feel like you're keeping pace. And it's frustrating. It's really frustrating.
I can only imagine. I mean, that, you know, we were looking at cut lines, you know, the last couple of weeks. Then the cut 2 weeks ago was seven. Last week, I think it was six. And, you know, me as a golfer, kind of the way my brain works is I see you guys. I mean, you know, you miss a cut. And as a analyst, as a broadcaster, somebody that's kind of critiquing or just basically conversing about the week, you go, oh, this person had a bad week. The bad, quote unquote, bad week might be 500 par. And, you know, as a golfer, I can only imagine if you swing it a positive way, you could say, you know, yeah, I missed the cut, but, you know, I didn't make a bogey or I shot five under. I mean, the runner up last week didn't make a bogey for the tournament. I mean, imagine not making a bogey for 72 holes and you don't even go on to win. So, you know, I can imagine kind of the obstacles and the hurdles you go through mentally just to keep yourself in tune and above water. It cannot be the easiest thing in the world to kind of deal with week to week.
Yeah, it's just funny. It's, I think like a couple of weeks ago, we had maybe a six or seven under cut. And I think the lead was maybe like 12 or 13. So it's like, you're not even like,
so bunched.
You're not even anywhere near out of it. And so, yeah, no, it's a crazy, crazy tour, this one. And I think like, obviously a big part of that, the golf courses are easy for sure. But we do play through a stretch where, you know, we're used to getting quite a bit of weather. And I think that weather just kicks in. You get soft weights where like every flag you can go at and all that stuff. But yeah, it's crazy. And when you get on these stretches of week after week after week, it really does become a blur because your mindset does truly change just to like getting out there and just getting the job done. Because, you know, if you don't shoot low scores, you just lose pace so quickly out here.
Okay, so I messaged you to jump on the podcast because I wanted to talk about your US amateur. I wanted to talk about your victory at Oakland Hills back in 16. And I wanted to get a little bit of advice for my next week in Colorado. What do you remember? Like, what's the moment? What's the memory when you kind of close your eyes and think about the 16 AM? What is the match, the shot, the day, the whatever the moment might be that kind of flashes across the eyeballs first?
Yeah, so it's actually one that probably people don't know of most. I had some like amazing matches in the match play, but I'd played two USAMs prior to that one and I'd missed out both times on the match play. The first time I missed out in a playoff for the 64, the second time I just missed. So for me going into that one, it was like really big. I was playing great golf at that point. And I was like, yeah, this is the year that, you know, I've got to get to through the 64. And I was always a notoriously good match player. Like we play a lot of match play in Australia. So I always loved playing match play. So I was like, just get me to the 64, get me to the 64. So I played the North course first, which is the slightly easier of the two, at Oakland Hills. Played a decent round, nothing crazy. I think that year I was sort of just going into it with the mindset that I wanted to just get to the 64. I wasn't trying to win the medalist honors. I was trying to just get to the 64. So let's play smart. And so I played nicely. And then the second round, we showed up on the South course, obviously the big boy course, and it was raining. And it was like not what you want to have to go post a number. And I think I was like, two or three over through nine, and it was just playing brutally tough. Like you just do not want to play that golf course any longer than it is, any tougher, like out of the rough. So I was a couple over, like things weren't going great. They weren't looking good. I was kind of starting to go close to the cut line, and I got to hole 12, which is par five, and I hit it off the tee in one of these tiny little bunkers up the left. And they're really deep, tiny little bunkers. And I just got this absolute peach of a lie. And my dad was caddying for me and I looked at him and I was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to go for it. This lie is so good. The big lip.
Do you remember how far you had?
I had like 235 meters. So it would have been like 260 yards. And it was like a tucked right flag. And I just like got in there with hybrid and I just hit this thing as good as I've ever hit a hybrid out to 2 feet. And tapped it in for eagle, and all of a sudden I went from being like on the cut line ultra stressed to inside the cut line and could just sort of like not cruise in but like just play golf coming in. And that was like to me the defining moment of the week, because I had just been so hell-bent on playing the match play and hadn't done it yet. So to, you know, make that shot at that time, that sort of made my life a lot easier getting to the 64.
When you mentioned the two previous AMs and then going into 16, did you feel like if you made the 64, you had a chance to win? Like, was that your mentality?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. As I said, we play a lot of match play. We have a lot of match play events in Australia. A lot of our like state AMs go stroke play into match play. So, I mean, we play heaps of it. And yeah, no, I'd been having a great year. But yeah, I think I went into USAM like maybe seventh in the world rankings. So like I was definitely not there to like mess around. I was there to go like play good and try and win. So yeah, like getting through the match play to me was like the tough bit. After that, you know, 1v1, it's game on.
When you think about the stroke play qualifying, like to me, it feels a little bit like heading into Monday, Tuesday in Colorado at Cherry Hills and Colorado Golf. To me, it feels a little bit like state qualifiers where you're trying to shoot around even par. You know, you're not trying to do anything sexy. It's not trying to go out there and overpower the golf course. Was that kind of the mentality in Detroit where you were just like, did you change the way you went about your game, or did you play golf the way you would play it if you were out there with your buddies on a given Wednesday?
Yeah, sure. No, I think that's where I went wrong the first couple of years was, you know, like I feel like as a kid and as just like a young player, I was never going to a tournament not to win. And okay. I think you go to, you know, USAM, these major venues. I played one at Atlanta Athletic Club and one at Olympia Fields.
Olympia Fields, yeah, 15.
Yeah, in 15, yeah. And I think in my mind, I was like going there and the medalist was also a high priority as well as obviously the match play. And so like trying to go and shoot a low score in these major championship venues, like it's the first time I'd ever seen golf courses like this. And they were obviously very difficult. I just don't think that was the right strategy for me. And so as I said, year three, all of a sudden I was like, I'm not going to, you know, go for as much, and I'm not going to let myself make as many mistakes by being silly and trying to shoot, you know, six or seven under in the stroke play rounds to win the medalist. Because at the end of the day, no one's going to the majors. No one's USAM champ for winning the medalist. In fact, I would think there are lots of people that don't even remember who wins medalist. So I completely changed my outlook and decided that, yeah, I just needed to be smart, make as many pars as possible. I think you're never going to be far away if you shoot even par at a USAM court, like in the first two rounds. So my strategy was just making golf as less stressful as possible. Lots of fairways, lots of greens, and just two putt and get out of there as much as possible.
I was going through, I covered the 16 AM. I remember I was out there with Fox. We were covering that amateur and I think I was out on the golf course. I remember I interviewed you when you won, but I was going through the match play. And one of my favorite things, by the way, is the super golf nerdy stuff that I like to do. But you go back and look through a champion's road to victory, right, to the Havemeyer. I mean, you play Andrew Huseman in the first round, Davis Riley in round two, Cameron Young, who you smoked in round of 16. You made 7 birdies in 14 holes. Sahith Theegala, who was young in the quarters. I remember you went 21 holes against Nick Carlson, who was a local favorite in the semis. Yeah. And then you played really well against Brad Dahlke in the finals to win 6-4. Which of those matches sticks out kind of that you remember, that you remember being a really tough battle? Because a few of those you won pretty handily.
Yeah, you know, obviously I knew Davis, I knew Cameron, and I knew Sahith. I knew all of them pretty well. I'd played events with them. And so I knew they were all great players. So like that was not like a surprise, and I knew who I was coming across. But I think probably the big match was, interestingly enough, the local kid, Nick Carlson, because
yep.
He had like a crazy following out there. I mean, it was psycho.
I remember there was like hundreds of people following you guys. I mean, it was crazy.
I mean, if you were out there, like even before we played in the semis against each other, like, I mean, I remember being out there in, you know, the quarters and round of 16, and you could hear where Nick Carlson was at on the golf course, because he was a local kid. He was pretty much unranked, and he was just going at it. He was killing it, and the locals were just loving it. I think he went to University of Michigan too, so yep. He just had like this crazy following out there, and they were wild. Like at points in my match with Nick, like I remember Nick, like and like this is like the most hats off moment to him, but I remember moments in our match, the crowd was going so crazy, like they weren't stopping when I was going to hit shots, you know, and he was telling the crowd to stop so that I could hit. So as I said, hats off to him, because I mean, some competitors just wouldn't do that, but he was, and that just match was just like, it was up and down. He was up pretty much the whole day. And it was a bit of a scrappy match on my end. But you know, like I managed to sneak through, and I think I won the last hole to go into extra holes. And then in the playoff, yeah, the playoff was wild. You know, hold a decent putt for par on the first hole to stay in it. I remember Nick on 11 from the middle of the fairway, which was our 20th hole. He hit one to like a foot, and I was in the fairway bunker. And I followed it up to like 5 feet and made that. So it just was a really crazy match, and it just, like I said, the crowd was very energetic, and it was definitely the most fun match I had.
How do you go about the energy conservation on the week? Because it's a ton of golf, dude. I mean, I'm looking at next week. I mean, I don't think people quite understand, you know, I'm going tomorrow. The practice rounds are the weekend before the stroke play. So it's not just Monday, Tuesday stroke play into match play. It's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And then if you're lucky to get to the 64, the match play begins. How did you go about kind of energy conservation? I mean, I'm 39 years old. I'm imagining you were probably, what, like 21 when you played in this. So slightly younger than me going into this. But what did you do in terms of just your body, energy, you know, trying to, you know, be in the best possible shape you could be in, you know, when you got to those golf courses?
Yeah, I mean, nothing crazy. I was young and dumb, but like, I mean, probably just eat healthy, to be honest. I was always like pretty big on eating pretty healthy, like at tournaments. And I remember that week, there were lots of like just clean proteins and clean carbs and salad, just keeping it really simple. But I mean, my best suggestion would be get through to the match play and win 10 and 8 every day. I mean, that's the best way to do it. You can play half the holes as everyone else.
Just Stephen Ames, everybody, and see how much energy you have by the end of the week. You said you're a great match play player. I found it interesting. I was talking to Nitties last week about what there's a term that you guys call them. They're not inner clubs, but in Australia, you guys play against other clubs like weekly. I mean, this isn't once a month. What's the term?
Yeah, so there's multiple things that we do. One's what we call penance on the East Coast.
That's right. That's the term. Yep.
We call it penance. So, and that is, yeah, your best, like, let's say 7 or 9 players in the club get selected to go play, yeah, inter club. And it's, you know, same format. It's just 1v1. You know, you add up the runs at the end of the day and see who wins between the clubs. And then, you know, it's a format, table format, where they pick, or you end up having the best two teams go to the finals at the end of the year. We also play interstate series. Obviously, in Australia, nowhere near as much golf, nowhere near as many states. One of the big deals growing up as a good amateur in Australia is representing your state at, like, okay, the Australian interstate series. So, you know, we would have a junior side and a men's side, boys and girls. Like, yeah, every year, you know, the state organization would select their best, same thing, best 7 players to go represent the state, and we'd all play interstate series. So it's an impossible format in America, too many states, too many golfers, but it works really well in Australia, and that's something I have, like, really fond memories of. That's probably, like, the favorite for me growing up, was, like, going and representing your state and, you know, staying a week with your friends and playing was pretty awesome.
What was the course when you were an amateur, when you were coming up? Because Nitties was telling me that, like, clubs will recruit great young amateurs, especially, you know, kind of high school age players. What was the course you played for? What was the course you represented when you were playing those matches?
I nearly got recruited to go play in another state once I was old enough. Yeah.
Nice.
Some clubs in like Melbourne, because Penrith is really serious, like on the Sandbelt and around that area. Some clubs would like bring international players in to
Oh,
play.
wow. Outside of Australia.
There were English players that would play. There were, New Zealanders that would play for teams if they were good enough. I nearly played for a club over there, but no, I never did end up doing that, and I always played for the club I was a member at my whole like life, which was Cottesloe Golf Club, and that's in Perth where I'm from. I just played for them because, that's where I has always been a member. That's where, I think when I think of where I play golf, that's it. So I just played there and played for them, and we won the pennant flag, and yeah, we did all that. It was pretty amazing.
You said you're a great match play player. You talked about the mentality of stroke play at the AM, going in, playing smart, making pars, not trying to get too cute with it. What's the mentality that's been so successful with you in terms of match play? How do you go about your business when you get into that format?
Yeah, I think there's two things that suit me when it comes to match play. And one thing is that I'm the king of hitting a pretty bad shot. So
Hey, you're speaking my language, baby.
yeah, exactly. So when I hit one offline, it's not usually like good offline, it's bad offline. So obviously in stroke play you get slapped for doing that. In match play you get away with it. It's just one hole. Like, I mean, if you make a double or a triple, just get out of your system and keep going, but I also make a lot of birdies. I always have made a lot of birdies when I play golf. So I think that in itself is a good format for match play, making lots of birdies, especially like getting out early and making birdies, because I think at USAMs on tough golf courses, making birdies, you're not going to have many holes. So just getting out there on the front foot and setting the pace early, momentum is massive in match play, like probably bigger than just regular tournament weeks. So I love that. That suited my game great. The other thing that I always appreciated about my game for match play was putting. I love the fact in match play that I could hit two mediocre shots into a par four, and I could have 40 feet, and my playing partner could hit it two great shots and be 6 feet. But as soon as I hole the 40 footer before he gets to his 6 footer, he's now facing a 40 foot 6 footer rather than he's going, oh, I've just got to make this to win the hole. And I think that I would say I frustrated a lot of people I played against putting really well and holing putts in on top of them or before them. Especially when you get a bit excited about, having the chance to win a hole, and then all of a sudden that excitement gets like broken down because someone holds a putt. Everyone hates that. I mean, I hate that. You hate that. Everyone hates that.
You're such an even keel guy. Like you've always, I mean, getting a chance to be around you in 16 and watching you play pro golf and go through this journey, you're a very even keel guy. Like you're very, very chill, but it seems like inside there's that level of kind of knowing you can almost get under people's skin because of the way you play, hitting a wild second shot after you hit a big foul ball off the tee or making a long putt. Could you see it in your competitor's face when you do that stuff to them? Where you hit an 8 iron from under a tree, a big cut 8 iron, and it finds its way on the green? Or like you said, you're playing Nick Carlson, he's in there a foot and you stick a fairway bunker shot to 5 feet. Did you get a rise from those types of things,
Oh,
even though obviously it didn't come out of you when you were shown it on your face?
yeah, massively. No, I love that. Like, it's literally like why I love match play so much, because I'm pretty like ruthless, and I enjoy being ruthless. I remember just on different counts, like being young and playing like match play events, and mixing up how far putts I was giving just to annoy people, because you're allowed to do
Okay.
that. Like,
Of
that's
course.
part of it. And I might start off the day and give someone a 4 footer, but then by the fourth hole, when they're expecting a 2.5 footer to be given, I don't give it to them. And people think about that stuff, and people might say that's unsportsmanlike, that's not in the game's best interest, but that's part of match play, and that's how it goes. And I mean, I'm going to take any advantage I can get.
I mean, I think there's a level of being a 39-year-old going to a US amateur and realizing that if there's somehow, some way I can make the 64, I'm almost one up on the first tee because all these college kids are going to be like, who the hell is, what the hell's going on here? Like, what's the dude with the gray goatee doing on the tee? Like, I feel like I can, like you said, any advantage is an advantage. Anything you can do to kind of get under somebody's skin, even if it's in a nice way, is helpful in match play. And I mean, I keep telling, like, I told my wife this, she's not a golfer, doesn't know much about golf. I'm like, if I can make match play, there's an advantage there about being a guy that these people aren't going to know, haven't seen play, and are going to think, I've got to beat the old guy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The unassuming underdog. It's like the best thing you could possibly have. No, use it to the best advantage you've got. I mean, geez, walk onto the tee with a walking stick. I don't know. Just
absolutely. Leave it gray. Don't shave. Curtis, I had a moment. You said the thing about, you know, giving a 4-footer and then not giving a 2.5-footer. I remember years ago, I was playing a club championship final against this guy that was really good. He played pro for a long time. And he was beating me. And on 11, I flagged a wedge like 3 feet above the hole. And he missed about an 8-footer for par. So he makes bogey. And I was kind of assuming he would give me it. All I got to do is 2-putt. And he didn't. And I remember kind of, I mean, it was a little slick down the hill. I mean, it's 3-4 feet, you know. And I remember my mind thinking, how do I 2-putt from 3 feet? You know, like, I've never thought about this before. And I kind of tapped it down the hill and it stopped on the edge and he gave me the putt for par. And I remember walking off and there was a moment I was annoyed. And then as I was walking down the fairway on the next hole, I went, that's amazing gamesmanship by him, because it's got my mind thinking off, you know, away from golf, away from what I was doing on the tee. And it got me kind of having to think about something else. And that's that level of match play that you can use to your advantage, is just trying to throw somebody off a little bit for a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you need. Exactly. I mean, in that case, you've literally just said you've spent almost two holes now thinking about something, or at least an entire hole thinking about something, and it ruffles your feathers. And that's not only, you know, the first time, that's not one hole, that's two holes that you could potentially take advantage of someone being in that phase. And yeah, I just loved that, because obviously golf is a genuine sport. We do everything by the books. We try and be as nice and out of the way for our competitors when it comes to stroke play. But in match play, there are things that you can do that make it a bit more like gritty. And I love that. I'm an ultra competitive person, and I love the fact that, like, I can use those small things to my advantage that maybe other people aren't prepared to do.
Curtis, great advice. I really appreciate it. Play smart in stroke play. Make a whole bunch of pars. Win every match 10-8, and use as much of the mental things as I can use against the young guns. You know, I mean, I think through those three things add up. I've dialed altitude. I feel like I've got the Denver numbers all already. I'm going to go hit some balls tomorrow and just see what they're actually flying like. But I'll say this, you know, I mean, it's been a goal of mine to qualify for one of these for a long time. I'm really fired up. I appreciate the time. I appreciate the advice. Anything else you can throw my way before we go?
No, we were in Denver 3 or 4 weeks ago. Have fun. I would say always over-exaggerate the altitude, like play for more than you think, because I don't know how, it just somehow always ends up going further than you think. So that would be my tip.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, you look at the yardages of these clubs, like the stroke play qualifying courses, and I mean, they look long, 7,500, 7,600, I think, is Colorado Golf. But as you know, in Denver, that's basically like you're playing a 7,000-yard golf course. I mean, it's not going to play long at all. And it is, it's wild. I'm going to have to manipulate the brain to go, oh, you can't hit the 7-iron from 215. You know, I mean, it is a little bit of like lying to yourself about the game. But as you said, the ball can fly. I lived there for a year. I know what the numbers can look like, but really appreciate the time. Good luck over the next few weeks. We'll be on the call. I think 2 weeks from now, we're back on the call. So looking forward to seeing you back out there again.
Sounds good. Well, good luck. Go get yourself a half a mile. So
thank you, Curtis. Appreciate the time. A huge thanks to Curtis for taking some time. He recorded this Thursday morning before his opening round on the Korn Ferry Tour. So a big thanks to Curtis. Great dude. Obviously, excellent advice. Just win every match 10-8. Okay, Curtis, that's what I'm going to try to do. First things first, try to get to match play. Very, very hard to do that. 312 players, I believe, best amateurs in the world, all trying to do the same thing. So we shall see. Just excited to be out there and going to be excited to mix it up with some great young players and great amateurs across the country and outside of the country, just worldwide event. And got to be pumped. You know, first U.S. amateur for me. And just getting a chance to be involved in something I've covered in the past is exciting. And yeah, you could follow along on the USGA website, and I'm sure there'll be some social stuff that we'll post over the next few days. But thanks for all the support. Appreciate all the messages from everybody, and looking forward to get out to Denver.